It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Daniel Finney is the Metro Voice columnist at the Des Moines Register. But for the last couple of months, in addition to covering his beat, he's also been writing about his weight loss journey. He started the process at 563 pounds, and he's been sharing his progress and his struggles with readers every step of the way on his Making Weight blog. We have a link to his blog up on our Facebook page right now at Iowa Public Radio. He's also with me today. Hello, Daniel.
Greetings.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Making the decision to share your story in the Des Moines Register with so many people must have been such a difficult decision to make. What made you decide that that was the right course for you?
You know, I didn't really think about it all the way through. And I think that if I had, I might have thought differently of it just because I had no idea that anyone would be this interested. I thought about it as, you know, I'm going to write about this one time, and then I'll move on to other things. And it was my editors, and this is precedent here, a reporter giving credit to an editor, but that said, look, people are really going to be into this. They're going to want to know more. How are we going to update them and keep them in the loop? And I thought they were nuts. I thought, no one's going to care. This is just going to be a one column, you know, in the wind and then off to the next thing. But the response has been singularly the most positive and overwhelmingly so positive thing that I've done in my career that dates back, you know, 22 years. And so I don't know that I really considered how vulnerable I was making myself at the time that I did that. And had I thought about that, I might have thought, I don't know if this is for me, because I'm not, I don't think most people are comfortable being publicly vulnerable. But once you're out there, you're out there. So you keep marching forward, I guess.
You mentioned that the response has been very positive. And of course, people are fascinated by your story. But in your blog posts, you've written about some of the incredibly hurtful things that people have said to you over the years because you are overweight. I mean, you have people shouting things at you from cars. This is a similar experience that many people who are overweight have experienced. There's just a lot of negativity, a lot of hurtful stuff going on out there. But the response to your article and to your blog, it's been positive?
I have not. In modern journalism, it's impossible or virtually impossible to write anything that receives universal acclaim or universal positive feedback. I mean, Twitter was invented to perfect the expression of anger among its users and sufferers of compulsive outrage disorder. And, you know, people who comment on stories, even on our website, can be very savage, very cruel, sometimes vile. And I get emails on other things that I write that just leave me flabbergasted that people think it's okay to talk to another person that way. Or communicate with them electronically or whatever. But with this, unlike anything else I've ever done, it's been 100% positive feedback. Now, there may be people out there who hate it, but they haven't expressed it to me. And it's really heartening. It gives some credibility or hope that people can be reached on a visceral human level. And, you know, I've heard from, you know, I also write about mental illness, depression, and anxiety, and I've heard from so many people who say, thank you for talking about this. No one talks about this. We want people talking about these kinds of things. And I've not gotten a single scold or a, you brought this on yourself, why do you expect other people to care? Any of the things that I would have anticipated getting on this, it's all been very positive, overwhelmingly so, and I've gotten more response on these stories and blog posts and columns than anything else I've ever done in my life.
You are braced for the worst, it sounds like.
I mean, absolutely. I'm braced for the worst all the time. This morning I wrote about an open letter to Fred Hoiberg, the Iowa State University men's basketball coach. And I went to Drake. I don't have any skin in the game, so to speak, on whether Fred leaves or stays in Iowa. But there were plenty of boo birds who were out in force on Twitter and commenting and sending email. And what I had written was largely positive about a guy that I think a lot of people admire. And for something like that, we still defaulted to our binary, divisive, you know, Hawkeyes versus Cyclones nonsense. And if people get caught up in that, they want to be the snarkiest and have that good one-liner and one-up somebody. And so I'm always sort of, I always assume sort of everything is going to end with people yelling at me.
I think a lot of journalists feel the same way right now. Well, let's focus on you and your story. You have struggled with your weight for a very long time. When did you realize that you had a problem?
I'm a reasonably intelligent person, and I know all of the risk factors of being morbidly obese. But I think it came in late December, sometime shortly before Christmas. I hurt my back. I was carrying in groceries, and I've hurt my back before, and it usually rebounded in a week or two or whatever. But this one just would not go away. And early in February, I was working on a column about life along University Avenue, and we stopped at AE Dairy to do some photos and video and interviews. And as part of the trip, we had to climb 4 flights of stairs. And I know I can't do this because of the pain in my back, but also because I'm just too fat. I wouldn't be able to make it. Or I would make it and I would spend the whole time trying to regain my breath. So I stayed down on the ground level, and I sort of still was justifying that in my mind. It's like, well, your back hurts, you're going to be, whatever. And then later in the day, we were at Mercy Hospital, medical center here in Des Moines, of all things. And we were touring a neonatal intensive care unit for part of the story. And I was drenched in sweat, and I was in, level 10 pain. And I couldn't keep up, and we were just walking, basically in a large circle on in a square block that this care unit took up. And the public relations man for Mercy, Greg Legan, offered to get me a wheelchair. And that was the moment I said, something's got to change. So I took the elevator down to the ground floor and sat down. And I called my doctor, Dr. Lisa Jensen, over at the Iowa Clinic, made some appointments, and we got an appointment with a nutritionist, got an appointment with my doctor, and got an appointment with physical therapy, and we started then.
So this was a real crisis moment for you, but in the first article you wrote about this, you talk about other crisis moments that had passed without spurring you to action. You said, I've ignored this for at least 5 years, probably longer. I ignored it after I was diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic. I ignored it when the scales at the doctor's office could no longer measure my weight because my girth exceeded 500 pounds. Why do you think this was different?
I was too fat to do my job. And my job is not, particularly physically stressful. Most of it is sitting and typing, and I was going out and talking to people, interviewing people. I'm not a police officer. I'm not a firefighter. I don't have to do a lot of running or any of that stuff. It's mostly just standing around or sitting around and talking to people, and I couldn't do it. I was physically unable to do this very, very sedentary job without extreme pain and extreme exertion. And I mean, it was, I can't tell you how humbling that moment was to know, because you can ignore diabetes. It's not healthy, but you can ignore it, particularly type 2, because it's not like juvenile diabetes or type 1. And you can ignore the numbers, especially if you don't know what they are. You can say, well, you kind of guess at your weight. But I think it was just easy to set aside and not look at it until I got to a point where I was easily envisioning myself in a scooter or a wheelchair, or having, you know, lost limbs to diabetes or whatever. And I had to get to that moment. Everybody has to bottom out somehow, and that's where I got.
That moment, I mean, you write a lot on your blog about depression and mm-hmm. about anxiety, and I think it's so interesting, exciting, and important that you are including this conversation in your weight loss journey, because a lot of weight loss conversations just revolve around diet and exercise and not the mental battle that you have to take on to be able to do this successfully. But it strikes me that in being able to ignore those other diagnoses and those other crises, that depression must have had a lot to do with that, because, as you said, you're clearly a smart guy. I mean, you knew the implications.
Well, depression is sort of self-hatred in a real intense form. And so, I have my dream job. I have the job that I've always wanted ever since I knew what being a newspaper columnist was. And so to think that I've never really been able to convince myself that I know what I'm doing or that I know what I'm talking about. So
we'll talk more about this in just a moment. I'm talking with Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Daniel Finney of the Des Moines Register about his weight loss journey. Coming up in just a few minutes, I'll also bring a couple of other people into the conversation. Dr. Bob Spanheimer is a visiting professor at the University of Iowa. He's also a doctor specializing in endocrinology and metabolism. Later in the hour, I'll also talk with Dr. Todd Ibis. He's a bariatric surgeon in West Des Moines and Belmont. And right now, I'm talking with Daniel Finney about his weight loss journey that he has shared very publicly in the Des Moines Register and on his blog, Making Weight. And again, we have a link to his blog on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. Was there a conscious decision that you made, Daniel, to write about the depression and anxiety that you struggle with?
Well, I've written about depression and anxiety ever since I became a columnist and before. When Robin Williams took his life, that was one of those transcendent moments where culture was aware of something. And the problem with culture, of course, is we can only be aware of something for like 30 seconds or less, and then it's on to the next stupid thing that doesn't matter. And I had written about my own troubles with depression, about, you know, being hospitalized or visiting the hospital with suicidal thoughts and anxiety. And it all ties together because, you know, eating for me is not a question of hunger pangs or cravings the way many people who struggle with obesity say. It was a question of, I am doing this as a substitution, as the phrase is eat your feelings, but I'm doing this to feel something. If I'm depressed, there's two ways that you're depressed. You're depressed in very much health, at least for me, very much self-loathing, or you're numb and you just can't feel anything. And I was putting things into my mouth. I was going out to restaurants and eating a full-size appetizer and a full-size meal, and then maybe an hour later going to another restaurant and eating out. And I was doing that just to feel something, to taste something enjoyable. And that was fed by, you know, the mental illnesses. And I'm treated for those. I take medication for them. And they largely work. But this was one of the areas where I was sort of subverting my own treatment.
When you put together a plan for weight loss, how many different people did you bring into making that plan? What kind of a team did you assemble?
Well, one, I relied on my therapist, who is one of the very best. He doesn't like to be named because he does a lot of work with public safety in Des Moines. But I've worked with him for several years, and he's a mental health, he's a psychologist. And I really started focusing on this eating issue in therapy. My primary care provider, Dr. Lisa Jensen at the Iowa Clinic, is where I started. She got me over the hump of getting some medication just to control the pain in my back, which was a stenosis and arthritis, a narrowing of the spinal column, brought on by the obesity, the extra weight pulling my spinal column down and narrowing the space that's in there for the nerves and whatnot. And then she referred me to physical therapy, and I chose Mercy South Physical Therapy here in Des Moines. And I've been working with just a wonderful physical therapist, Stephanie Kirk, who I've built up a great deal of trust, and she's made me a lot better, a lot stronger. And then, you know, finally, I go to Mercy Weight Loss Nutrition Center in West Des Moines, where I meet regularly with a nutritionist, Jackie Thielen, where we do the weigh-ins, because though I've lost some weight, I'm still over 500 pounds, and you need a special scale once you're over 500 pounds. And they have them there. And also she helps me with the data that I get from plugging my calories and what I eat into my phone, an application in my phone, and helps me do the math on weight loss. So it's a four-person team of medical professionals. And, you know, thank God I have insurance.
Right. You have made a tremendous amount of progress in the 2 months, and you have been, as I mentioned, blogging about the progress, sharing the results of your weigh-ins. You've also shared a lot about the app that you've chosen to use and tracking your calories. Is there something about all of this technology that we have available now, our ability to quantify calories and exercise in a way that we weren't able to do even 10 years ago? Do you think that is a tool that has really made this possible for you?
Well, I use an application called MyFitnessPal, which is free. It's sponsored by one of the athletic companies, I think. But it's very valuable in that it does two things for me. It allows me to easily track my calories. Instead of looking at the label and doing this longhand, I can, in processed foods or packaged foods, for example, if I got, say, some steam in bag green beans that I would throw in the microwave for a few minutes, I can just scan the UPC code, and the application will read that, and the brand will know the brand, how many calories are in a serving, and then you just enter how many servings you're eating out of that. And if you go out to eat, which I do quite a bit for socialization, most of the national restaurants, the bigger chains, are already in the app. And in the smaller chains or the local restaurants, you know, you have to do some estimating. But, you know, Catfish at one restaurant might vary slightly, but you get better at knowing what's a few ounces and what's, you know, a cup versus a quarter of a cup and that sort of thing. But the tracking of the calories was the key to opening it all up, because then I had a ledger, just like you would have with a checkbook. I had a ledger where I'd say, this is how many calories I have to eat in a day, and here's how many I've spent, so to speak. And I'll tell you, I avoided this for years because I thought this is going to be tedious. It's going to ruin every meal. And it's really, the technology has made it super easy. And if you just take a couple of extra steps while you're preparing your food or while you're sitting down with a menu, then you know, okay, my goal today is 2,700 calories. I've already had 1,800. So on this meal, I'm going to have to, you know, keep it in the 600 calorie range and make different decisions than if I had only eaten, you know, 500 and 600 calories going into that meal.
One of the recommendations that a lot of weight loss experts make in this day and age is to create a social network to keep yourself accountable as you go on your journey. You have done that in a bigger way than I think anyone else. Do you feel like that accountability, the fact that you know that people are following your blog and reading and rooting for you, does that make it easier?
No. In one way, I want to express great gratitude to all of the people who have written, who've offered support, who continue to offer support, for people who offer prayers, who wanted me to come to church with them, who have told me that I am, they're inspired by what I'm doing here. But for me personally, it's kind of a burden. It's not one that makes me want to go off and eat a bucket of ice cream or anything. It's just, I'm not used to being that open. I'm an introverted guy. I don't like gatherings. I'm not the kind of person who wants to go to a concert, because there's a huge crowd. I don't go to sporting events. I like quiet and solitary things most of the time. So this is a very big step for me, a very big change for me to open up in this way. And the support has been wonderful. And it is heartening. But the thing I keep in mind most is, you know, I don't want my parents to have to bury me, or I don't want to not be able to enjoy this terrific job I have because I've wrecked my health by putting too much food in my body. And so being social about it has been good in one way, but there are people who come to me and ask for advice, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist of any kind, and I always start out with, look, you need to get your own medical team together on this, and make the decisions based on science and what what the people in your life are telling you. I can't help you. I can only tell you this is what it's like been like for me.
Now, speaking of making scientific decisions, and a lot of people at this day and age will recommend bariatric surgery for weight loss when someone is morbidly obese. That is not the route that you've chosen to take at this point. Although even if it was the route that you chose, you would still be preparing for that surgery. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But why have you decided not to pursue that?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, I've never had surgery save having my wisdom teeth out. I still have my tonsils and appendix, mostly all original equipment on this model. And so having surgery is terrifying to me. And then secondly, I don't think that I've ever seriously tried to lose weight, certainly not this seriously. I've always allowed myself to gain a little bit of weight and change pant sizes going up. And there was a period for about a year, year and a half after college where I was serious about walking and exercising. And maybe 10 years ago, I was on an exercising jag that lasted 7 or 8 months and I lost some weight. But in terms of really taking note of what I'm putting into my body and counting the calories and exercising in a way that gradually improves. I don't think I've ever tried that. And I wanted to try that. If I fail at this, that's still an option. But I'm not failing, and I've, you know, I'm farther down the line every time. So I'm going to stick with that. The surgery that would have best worked for me was a gastric sleeve surgery, which involves cutting out 60 to 80% of your stomach. And that made me very nervous from the idea of this is a healthy functioning organ. The thing that's not functioning properly is my mental health. And I'm working on that really hard. And I thought, because again, so many of my fellow travelers in morbid obesity or obesity will say it's the cravings. I have to eat. And I don't have those cravings. I'm not overwhelmed by the desire to eat, except in those moments when I'm dealing with panic or depression. And I thought, well, what if I worked on all these things at once and really tried and really buckled down and did the work? And so I decided that surgery was going to be option number two for me, and I was going to try the slow path. And I recognize that I have a lot of weight to lose, and that I could lose it much faster through the surgery. And I anticipate this to be a 4 or 5 year journey. I don't know if people will still be reading the blog in 4 or 5 years or not, but I anticipate taking that period of time to lose the weight, because, you know, there are plateaus, and the first pound is easier to lose than the last pound, just because of the way that your metabolism and your body changes, and you gain muscle and whatnot. But I wanted to try it this way because, you know, in every time that you have surgery, there's risk in it. Now, there's obviously good doctors. You're going to bring a good doctor on. You know, they're not killing people or anything. But I thought, you know, if I don't have to do that, if I have another option, let's give it a shot.
I want to ask you one more question before we turn to one of our physicians here. And that is, you know, in reading about your progress, the weight loss so far has been very impressive. 38 pounds by your second weigh-in. Mm-hmm. But what impresses me more is how much you've been able to improve as far as mobility goes. How are you feeling? Are you feeling a lot better?
Yeah, I mean, you have to take it because the depression and the anxiety will always try to twist the image. And so I struggle with that, but I always try to remind myself that the first day at the physical therapist, they have a small marked out track inside of the building. And one trip around it is 156 feet. And I could only barely do one lap before I had to sit down. I was drenched in sweat. I was completely exhausted. And I probably had about a 7 pain in my back and legs. The last time I did that test, which was 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, I did 20 laps. And I was averaging a lap in a little less than a minute. And I'm due for that test again in my next visit. And I, you know, I can get in and out of the car. I can walk some longer distances, a mile, maybe a little bit more consecutively if I take some breaks. I'm able to do little things around the house. Simple stuff like walk out to the mailbox, which is about a half a block, and walk back, and not feel like I've run the Boston Marathon. And those little things are tremendous life improvements. You go from dreading simple, basic daily tasks to not really thinking about them at all the way you should. And you become very grateful for the fact that you are on this journey to recover.
I'm so glad that kind of progress has been part of your experience so far. That's got to be a huge improvement in quality of life. And Daniel, thank you so much for being so open and so generous with your story in the newspaper, on your blog, and today. Daniel Finney is the Metro Voice reporter for, or columnist for, the Des Moines Register. He's been writing about his weight loss journey on his blog, Making Weight. We also have a link to his blog on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. Coming up in just a moment, I'll turn to Dr. Bob Spanheimer. He's a visiting professor at the University of Iowa and a specialist in endocrinology and metabolism. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about weight loss. And I was talking with Daniel Finney, the Metro Voice columnist with the Des Moines Register. And he's been writing about his weight loss journey, starting at 563 pounds. And what he's discovered through comments is that he's not alone, but also the statistics bear him out as well. In 2010, 8 out of every 100 Iowan adults had been diagnosed with diabetes. In 2009, 42% of adults in Iowa had diabetes or pre-diabetes. We ranked 12th in the nation in rates of adult obesity. This is a struggle that a lot of people in Iowa and everywhere have today. And with me right now is Dr. Bob Spanheimer. He's a visiting professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa and a doctor specializing in endocrinology and metabolism. And Bob, when physicians are taking care of patients that are significantly overweight, I mean, I know for a long time that it was difficult to have that conversation with a patient about the health implications of weight. Is that something that doctors need to be broaching with their patients?
They do, Charity. I think in part we found that conversation difficult for a couple of reasons, one of which was just broaching with patients. The second was that we didn't have a lot of medications, a lot of data to support some of the things we wanted to do with these patients. So it was a difficult conversation, and I think we now recognize that patients were frustrated by not having that conversation. But I also want to say that physicians were just as frustrated. We didn't have the tools, the information, that we could really make a change in their lives. And I think that's changed.
Well, and no matter what a doctor says, I mean, the patient has to be ready to embark on that journey. I mean, just listening to Daniel talk about his story, but if you talk to anybody who's tried to lose a significant amount of weight, it's an incredible challenge, and you have to be ready for it.
You do. One of the things that I try not to do initially is to overwhelm patients. You don't want to set too high a goals. You want to take it one step at a time. And I think that is daunting to many patients to begin that journey. And I was very pleased to hear how he started that journey about the crisis. And we all recognize and accept that patients need to be engaged in their disease. Getting that engagement, having them accept that moment of crisis, as he said it, is really important, and you can't succeed without it.
What kind of tools can you offer a patient who says, I do want to lose this weight, I understand the health implications, but I've tried everything I can think of?
So my approach to patients is really, and he said it, do the math. Have them understand about calories. Have them understand. My first question in some of these patients is, how many calories did you take in today? And they just kind of look at me with a blank stare because no one thinks about that. But it's calories in, it's calories out, and it's that balance that's really, really important. Roughly 3,000 to 500 calories per pound. So if you reduce your diet by 500 calories a day, in a week, that's 1 pound. At the end of the week, check to make sure that you're actually going in that right direction. So pointing patients in the right direction and then having them make progress is really, really important. So understanding, education, knowledge, nutritionists, those are really key important points. What we now have, I think, that's new is we have additional medications for weight loss. The FDA has approved 4 new medications in the last 2 years. So the message is from the FDA, these are necessary for physicians to help their patients because this obesity is now a disease. It's not a cosmetic problem. It's a medical health crisis. And that recognition in 2013 by the American Medical Association really started the domino effect. It's a disease. We need medications and tools to treat this. And we're seeing the FDA respond to that. So now we have new medications. And finally, and I know your next guest is a bariatric surgeon, there are new procedures that are safer. We have more information about that. And the data on health benefits of this weight loss is really starting to accumulate. So we have the ammunition now. We have the reason to get there. And I think it's a change in attitude as well. We need to do something. As a healthcare community, we need to address this problem.
Now, you talk about doing the math, and I think that can be incredibly valuable. But anybody who has either tried to lose a significant amount of weight or just a few pounds and started running those numbers knows that the math isn't always right. I mean, there are a lot of other factors that go into weight loss and weight maintenance.
That's absolutely true. And I think as an endocrinologist, I myself recognize there are some diseases that lead to excess weight as well. So one of the things I think very important is that I make sure they don't have these medical problems that lead to weight gain, such as thyroid problems, for example. And even though they're very rare, and let me say, in my practice, maybe 1 or 2 out of 100 patients have these, they are treatable, they're correctable, they're important. There are medications that can lead to weight gain as well. So making sure that's set is really important, I think, in every practice. But then it's the one step, one block's better than no block at all. Walking, the 500 calories less is better than no calories less. That step-by-step approach, I think, is really important.
You talk about weight loss drugs and, of course, or weight loss medications. When I hear that, a lot of red flags, a lot of alarm bells go off because, of course, we have this huge industry built around weight loss in our country. And there have been a lot of drugs on the market for a long time, some of them more reputable than others. How do people respond when they hear about weight loss medications?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And the internet, I think someone said to me recently, the internet has a lot of information. Some of it's actually correct and accurate. So you have to be very careful, to your point, over-the-counter medications especially. These drugs I mentioned were approved by the FDA, so they had to undergo rigorous trials to meet certain goals to prove that they actually do result in weight loss. But again, even when they're FDA approved, there are always risks to medications. And so you have to be convinced, both the patient has to be convinced and the physician, that the medications, with whatever risks or side effects they may have, are better for the patients than the disease you're trying to treat. And I think that's the critical bottom line. Obesity now has proven itself to result in many other conditions. Decreased lifespan, decreased quality of life, those are the things we need to address.
Along with weight loss and obesity problems, I mean, comes a lot of shame, a lot of frustration, a lot of, Daniel was talking about the self-loathing that goes along with depression, but also there's a lot of self-loathing that goes along with being overweight and thinking that you failed, thinking that you are at fault. What kind of recommendations can a physician make to help a patient deal with some of not just the serious mental health problems that may go along with obesity, but also that kind of mental struggle and that kind of self-loathing?
So I think in my experience, what I try to do is get to patients to recognize success in small steps. So the walking of a block, he talked about walking around the track one time and making it it was very difficult for him. The next time he did it, it was easier. So that's a success. Success also in pounds, not in the end. We know now that just losing 5% of your body weight. So I think some people say, well, that's a drop in the bucket compared to how much they weigh. We now know there are metabolic changes that go on that are going to benefit the patient. And if they lose 5 to 10%, there are cardiac benefits. There's improvement in care of diabetes and blood sugars besides the well-being. So recognize the small steps as successes. And I think as I say it to my patients, first we have to point you in the right direction, and then we have to get you moving in that direction. It's not a race. It's not a race. Small steps, success.
Well, and when you lose weight slowly, what do the statistics say about your ability to keep that weight off?
So I think that's important about success if you do it slowly. It's the type of weight you're losing. If you do, for example, if you fast and don't eat for 24 hours, you will lose weight. But a large part of that weight is protein or muscle, and that's not what you want to lose. You want to lose the fat. So slow weight loss, losing fat, building skeletal muscle, which, you know, is a plateau that he talked about, in the long run is much more healthier for you. And I think his feeling better, his making progress, recognize those as successes.
I want to bring Dr. Todd Ibis into the conversation. He's a bariatric surgeon with Iowa Weight Loss Specialists in West Des Moines and Belmont. Hello, Dr. Ibis.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. And I think that bariatric surgery gets a lot of press, and we've seen some amazing results from it. It is a lot more accepted in this day and age than it was very frightening when it first appeared. Can you tell me a little bit about what makes a patient a good candidate for bariatric surgery?
Well, our patients in general have tried medical weight loss for quite some time, and I really applaud the way that Mr. Finney has a whole team around him, and he's really trying hard in working on medical weight loss. And we start thinking about surgery as an option when they just aren't successful with the medical weight loss, that they're still dealing with all of their diseases, such as their diabetes, sleep apnea, hypertension, joint pains, all the problems they're having. And that's when we start to think about using surgery as another tool to help suppress their appetite and control their portion sizes.
And, you know, I can imagine there are a lot of people who struggle with their weight and try to lose weight who maybe don't technically have a weight problem. As I mentioned, that weight loss industry in the United States is huge. What kind of weight loss do you, or what kind of obesity level do you need to be at to make you a good candidate for the surgery?
Right. For surgery, we start dealing with patients when they're 100 pounds over their ideal body weight or have a body mass index of over 40. If they fall into the 35 to 40 range of body mass index, we offer surgery if they have diabetes, high blood pressure, or sleep apnea, particularly because our surgery is really a metabolic surgery and really going to change how these diseases affect their body. If we can get their weight down, you know, the response in type 2 diabetes alone is dramatic for these people.
What kind of success rates over the long term do people have with bariatric surgery? I understand that the weight loss happens for most people very quickly, but over the long term, what kind of maintenance results do we see?
Sure. We always like to talk about effective versus non-effective weight loss. And in our patients, when we really look at people that are 100 pounds or more over their body weight, and what's their chance with dieting of losing at least half of their excess weight compared with surgery? And in our patients, 90% of the patients are going to be successful in getting at least half of their excess weight off, which can make tremendous impact in their diseases. When you look at the long-term studies that are out at more than 8 years after bariatric surgery, we still see patients maintaining 50 to 60% of their excess weight off. So that's enough to make a big difference in their medical diseases.
I think there is a feeling among some people that weight loss surgery is kind of the easy way out, but this is not an easy process to get ready for the surgery. It's not an easy process once you've had the surgery.
Absolutely. I mean, I hear that all the time. I've got a slide about it in my educational class that we do, and my patients get very upset when they hear that because they're like, well, we're going in surgery, people are cutting into us, that sort of thing, so that's not the easy way out. I talk about effective versus non-effective. And when you start thinking about people that are 100 pounds overweight and have been on 20 different diets in the past and working with people, what's their chance of success? And when you look at our average weight loss, you know, we average 65% excess weight loss, and at least 90% of our patients will get half off. And what they really have to understand, when we do metabolic surgery, you know, for years we thought the stomach just digested food and stuff went through your GI tract, and it was just kind of sitting there, mostly just absorbing. But what we've learned is your stomach and GI tract make a lot of hormones that control your appetite. And when you go on a diet, your body thinks you're starving all the time. So you're getting this constant stimulus that you're hungry. And for most people, it's very difficult to overcome that. But if we do one of the newer surgeries, like a sleeve gastrectomy, and I remove 70% of their stomach, I'm going to drop their hormone levels significantly. And when they're much less hungry, all of a sudden their appetite's under control, and they can eat 800 or 900 calories a day, 1,000 calories, and be completely satisfied. And I think that's why some of the patients, when you're 100 pounds overweight and you have to diet for an entire year to get your weight under control, it's very difficult to overcome those hormones, and you feel like a failure all the time.
Well, Dr. Spanheimer, I would love to hear your opinion about weight loss surgery, because again, as I've said, it's something that's become much more accepted, much more common in our culture, in our society. Is this a tool that you feel is being used in the right way?
I do. When I sit down with patients, I actually go through with them a logical progression, come up with a plan. And what's really important is individualizing that plan, making sure that it fits that patient. And I say, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to try this, and then we're going to try the medications. I'm going to give you 3 months. But if that doesn't work, if you can't achieve it, that's not failure. And there is surgery that can be done at the end of that plan. Some patients elect to change that plan. I mean, and again, it's the individualization, but it's I think being used appropriately. It's given us data that shows remarkable, even survival rates now in patients who've lost a significant amount of weight, and it is an option.
The odds are really stacked against somebody who wants to lose 300 pounds or needs to lose 300 pounds. And doing it without surgery, I think the odds of actually successfully doing it are like 5% or something very discouraging.
So the numbers are low. Given we know now more today than we did when those numbers were generated, I would hope we could do a little better, especially with the new medications, but they are overwhelming.
So in our culture, we know a lot about the problems that can be developed when we are significantly overweight or obese. Most of us are smart enough to understand this, yet doing what we need to do to prevent this from happening seems to be something that a lot of people are incredibly resistant to. Do you see this kind of emphasis on prevention changing in medicine?
I do. And I think healthcare providers are getting more engaged. We're getting more information. We have more tools. We need to become more engaged, and we have to have that conversation with patients because prevention and modeling for our children, I think that's another thing that's not talked about a lot, is that kids do what they see, not what you tell them. And if you're not paying attention to your health, your weight, they won't either. So we need to be good role models for the next generation.
And do you really feel as if there's a cultural shift, or is this what you hope is happening?
Maybe some hybrid of those two. I certainly hope, and I hope, that it is changing. I do see it. I see physicians having that conversation. I see patients wanting that conversation.
Well, Dr. Bob Spanheimer, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Spanheimer is a visiting professor of internal medicine at the University of Iowa, also a doctor specializing in endocrinology and metabolism. Dr. Todd Ibis, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the time.
Dr. Ibis is a bariatric surgeon with Iowa Weight Loss Specialists in West Des Moines and Belmont. We began the hour, of course, talking with Daniel Finney, the Metro Voice columnist with the Des Moines Register. You can follow along on his weight loss journey on his blog, Making Weight, and through future articles in the Des Moines Register. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime. We love to hear from you, your thoughts on things you hear on the show, suggestions for programs you'd like to hear in the future. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.